Make some noise if you're ready!
10 seconds to go.
Oh, that right hook, Kevin, really felt that here at the end. This could be all over with the last 10 seconds. The right hook was the danger shot.
The Carlo kid goes 1-1 in Bama.
Kilkenny, Ireland. He is Mick Basho.
Rambling Rhinos podcast number 8. I don't have 8 fingers, but you know.
Well, technically well, you do.
I'm looking at one hand and holding a microphone in the other hand. Thanks for pointing out the blatantly obvious. Ken McGuire with you on the couch next to me. Andy Murphy is back after a sustained absence.
Seems like a feckin' eternity.
I'm going to turn up your mic. Which microphone are you on?
Hello, Ken.
Hey.
So you thought I was still gone, didn't you? Back, Ken. Back.
Fucker. How are things?
Yeah, good. As I said last time I was here, I was like, just good getting back, walking up the stairs and getting that. There's actually a new fresh smell of paint there because it's one of the lads outside painting there. But it's good to be back up around, having a banter with the lads now. Just next stage is getting back on the mats and moving around and just stepping up a bit, like, you know. So
it's first day Rambling Rhinos is fully reunited. In weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Miles missed one and I missed one. Were you away as well at one stage? Or were you a stalwart now? Or?
I don't know. I can't remember.
A Rambling Rhinos veteran. Mick Brennan.
Holding the show.
Yeah.
Well, you're here on your right-hand side on the couch, Miles Price.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. All good?
All good now, yeah.
Head good?
Head is all good. Body's good. Yeah. Training regular now. Bring the team's coming on great, like a couple of gold medals there last weekend. And I'm in the Irish Open now, Northern Ireland, 25th November. And then I'm going to the British Open, no gi, and then we'll be competing in the new year, I'd say.
Nice.
Early the new year, so that's the crack with me at the moment.
Savage. Mick, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Like Andy said, you're now the stalwart, the cornerstone of the podcast.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. You've been taking over from you guys again.
Yeah. All is good with Mick. Just get back into the routine. That is all.
That is all. Excellent. Well, our routine, we've been out of it for about 3 weeks, give or take. Loads has happened since, including UFC 216.
That was a great show.
Two big fights.
Yeah.
Two big fights, yeah.
Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee.
That was a very good fight. But I agree with Daniel Cormier's outlook that he's unorthodox and he's tough, but he hasn't come against anyone that hits like Conor.
No.
And if he walks in with those wild shots and that unorthodox style,
catch him.
He's going to get caught and he's not going to be able to recover.
Conor's
he's not going to recover. Like
Conor's timing is way too good for that.
Yeah.
He's just and a lightweight like Conor is a different animal. Like
his hands are sharper now as well, aren't they?
Huh?
His hands are going to be even sharper now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? So everyone says, "Oh, he's not going to do great when he comes back to MMA because all he's done is focus on boxing." I'm like, yeah. He's just improved his actual main skill set. Like,
yeah, you know, and he's going to be very confident after fighting like the best in the world in Floyd Mayweather, like in his first pro boxing fight.
Absolutely.
Like it's just, but like at the end of the day, Conor's style would never adapt to boxing, but it's made for MMA. He hits particularly hard with 4 ounce gloves. Jeez, and Tony Ferguson runs forward wildly.
Wild, yeah.
And he throws crazy combinations coming forward, which is bad news.
It's like an early Christmas present for
Conor. Just, that's great. Like,
he's just like, come on.
It took Tony Ferguson until the third round to get the win, fighting a Kevin Lee who reportedly had to drop from 174 to 155 within the day.
Crazy. And had a staph infection.
And had a staph infection that was hidden. And kind of hidden from the commentary or was something like that.
Yeah, it was fairly clear it was there. Like.
Yeah. Well, it's like he had an alien growing out of his chest.
Jeez. It looked like a really deep bruise on his chest though as well, didn't it? It kind of looked quite, you know, obvious.
That whole situation is just crazy then.
Does that scenario make it more of a mismatch for Tony Ferguson that he's not fighting somebody who's supposedly medically cleared to fit or medically cleared to fight?
That's not his problem.
Yeah.
I'd agree, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not his problem. He's there on the day. The other guy is approved on all aspects to fight.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's like, it's one of those things as well that it looks like the Tony in most of his fights takes a round to warm up.
Mm.
And he did against Kevin there as well.
Yeah.
And it
and
didn't.
That's Connor's.
And like Mike, and Connor's strongest. Just such a fast starter. Like, if you want to beat Connor, you got to get into the later rounds.
Yeah.
You got to get a few takedowns to wear him out, push him up against the fence, wear him out there. You got to be somewhat successful to demoralize his offense with the striking. So you need to have an actual game plan down how to neutralize his striking, not just go in wildly, you know. And I can't help but feel that Tony's going to do that. And if he has a bad round, it's going to be an end of a night round.
Yeah. That's the thing.
You can't take a round to warm up with someone like Conor. Like,
no way.
Someone has knockout power. Like, you know, all it takes is one to land. Like, you know, you got to be switched on from the start. Like, you know.
Could
like,
you see?
As well as that big weight drop he had to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, his health is at risk doing that, man. Mm.
What you need to do with Connor is you need to have a very good gauge of distance and you need to kick like a motherfucker. You can't come in kick punching range. I've never seen Connor knock someone out with kicks.
Yeah.
So first step, stay the fuck out of punching range. Well out of punching range. Can't go anywhere near the hands. You have to kick. Kick, kick, kick. Create angles before he does. Kick, kick, kick.
Circle to your left.
He's very good. He's very good at getting his southpaw right foot to the outside of an orthodox left foot. That's what he's good at. So you got to keep your left foot on the outside of his southpaw's right foot. And you need to feint kick. Yeah. Feint kick. And you got to fucking keep doing that shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, can we talk about Mighty Mouse's finish?
Yeah.
Holy
that
shit.
That was unreal. Christ. That was class, yeah.
In fairness,
I have to say, I've never been as excited about a finish in my life. That was amazing.
It looked like it could have gone the distance.
I know.
Up until that point, it was like, okay, grand, you know.
He's definitely the pound-for-pound best. Like.
Yeah, man.
Like, when you're talking about skill level and all that, like, you know, and just...
How do you even think of suplexing a dude and catching his arm before he lands on the
canvas? Because he's getting bored with the contenders, that's why. He wears guys, he has a very good way of wearing people down so he can do all that crazy shit.
Yeah.
Jeez, it looked brilliant.
Unbelievable.
And I love my arm bars, and that was great to see.
He just doesn't seem to get the respect because of the weight class he's at. So I put up a photo on social media there last week of when I met him over on my honeymoon. Like he was on my wedding video that time, you know, that Marina did up for me. But like he is literally half the size of me, but the guy would still kill me, like, do you know that kind of way? Because, you know, obviously he fights in series weight class. And I always wanted to see, say, Neil get a chance to fight Mighty Mouse, just to watch it, like, do you know what I mean? But obviously Mighty Mouse just on a completely
serious,
another level.
He's just
like,
he's a serious
athlete.
But
now that he's matched that, I can see why he didn't fight TJ Dillashaw before. But now that he's is it matched or he's beaten?
I think he's
the title defences. Is it match or beaten?
He's beaten, hasn't he?
He's beaten, obviously.
He was matched with Anderson Silva before.
Yeah.
And now he's in 11 now.
Yeah.
So now that he's beaten that, like, I don't think a good move for him is to stay there. He needs to earn that respect back from... It was a good move not to take the Dillashaw fight at the time because he's obviously... His goal was probably to beat that. So now he's the longest reigning defending champion ever in the UFC.
Now he can do what?
And if he doesn't move up to 61 to challenge someone for a belt, I think it's going to be worse marketing for him now. He's in stalemate now.
Yeah.
I think that people are going to go, yeah, but remember he didn't take that fight with TJ Dillashaw? What? They're going to find some way to bash him down.
Yeah.
Off the pound-to-pound rankings and all that shit about the weight division.
It doesn't help his popularity or his promotion. Like, he's not Conor McGregor.
He's
just
a nice guy.
He's
like,
just
isn't he?
Too nice of a guy.
Way too nice.
And that's why he's not getting as much respect as he should be.
No one in the bleeding UFC is open Conor.
What Chael Sonnen said as well, he said there's no one in that flyweight division has come out as the bad guy. As in, like, you know, there's no one coming in saying, you know, talking a load of shit, and there's no... there's no like riffraff down there to promote massive fights for Mighty Mouse. But then also like Mighty Mouse back in the day, he fought the likes of Dominic Cruz, he's fought Brad Pickett and that. So he has, you know, he's fought them guys, but I think it's a case of now he's cleaned out that flyweight division. He's like get back up to bantamweight maybe and test a few bodies there.
Different confidence he has going back up though. If he was going to go up, it'd be great to see Garbrandt, him beating Dillashaw, and then Garbrandt obviously the bad boy, so bad guy. Yeah. So he'll finally get his bad guy matchup.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and it'll be against like the champion, and it's a win-win because what's he gonna do?
Yeah,
lose his belt, like.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
That of course, would be a like, not. To watch.
Like, he, and it's not going to be Cody going down. It's going to be TJ going up or DJ going up. So I think that's his next move, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with that.
Unless they could maybe meet
to make yourself get to that next step.
Yeah, he's at a stalemate now. Like, and people are just going to keep discrediting him because of not taking the TJ fight. Because
he's bet everyone. Like,
oh, yeah.
In that division.
Well, he's like the best pound for pound, but he needs to go to the next level now.
I can't wait for that TJ Garbrandt fight though.
That's when is that happening again?
November the 4th.
Yeah.
Like, even my head spinning the last few months, I still remember that date. I'm like, I can't wait to watch that fight.
November 4th.
Yeah, that should be a cracker. I think it's like, is there a UFC event on like next 10 weeks? Like, there's one on every weekend now.
There's a load of them on the run into Christmas.
You're going to have a lot
to talk about. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah.
Gdansk is coming up with Cerrone and Darren Till.
Yeah, that's going to be a good fight.
This weekend as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a main event?
Cowboys main event. Yeah.
Oh, that's that card, is it?
Yeah. And then
you trained with Feely, didn't you?
Yeah, what's he like? Feely. He's a top dude, but he's very rangy. He's very wiry. He's very unorthodox as well. He moves between stances.
Has he got a good style in comparison to...
I think, it's a matchup I'm certainly looking forward to watching because obviously Lobov has, has power in his hands. I think he's going to be a bit of a gunslinger, obviously, but Feely kind of moves around a lot. I know he's coming off a loss, but he's kind of had a bit of a record in UFC where he wins one, loses one, wins one, loses one.
Feely,
so he's lost his last one, so it means he must be winning this one. So it's gonna be, I think it's... even from a neutral perspective, like, you know, looking on the outside, I think it's like if Lobov lands one of them big shots, then it could be night-night Feely. But at the same time, if Feely kind of, keeps his range and distance and mixes things up, then, it could be a tricky one for Lobov. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good fight.
I haven't seen your man Feely fight before, so I'm not sure. Like, it's mad that Artem's gone from a main event slot just to there, isn't it? Like, you've got a pretty big opportunity with that Cub Swanson fight. I was a shocking, in my opinion, when I heard it, I was like, Jesus Christ, main event against Swanson, that's massive. Like,
he went the distance with him. I remember Swanson landed back elbow on him as well, and some nice shots there, and he stayed in the fight. So I think it's either this weekend, it could be like, I don't know, either Feely by decision or Lobov by KO. I think they're the two variables I kind of see. That on the outside in.
You were talking about weight cut. There was another thing you were saying, Ken.
Oh, the pancreas cut. Daniel Lima.
Lima, yeah.
Yeah, Brazilian guy, 290.
Oh, my God.
Is it Daniel or Douglas Lima? Is this on Bellator?
Daniel, different.
No, pancreas.
Pancreas.
Yeah.
He was...
what was he? He a strawweight bout... 7-fight win streak heading into it. Again, big weight cut. Well, it's now that we've spoken about kind of Kevin Lee and the rumors that he has to drop
a lot, but it's still a lot, man.
16 pounds in 2 days for somebody who's
already
at that weight. Like, and missed weight by 2 pounds at the same time.
Jeez.
Had to be almost like dragged on stage and balanced on the scale.
It's quite disturbing to watch.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's horrible.
Crazy.
You'd be better off not fighting.
It's not worth it.
I mean, where do you draw the line? Like, is it the responsibility of the fighter to get to the weight safely? Is it the team that are around him at that level that need him to get to the weight safely? Or do you go, actually, we need to just pull this? There is no hope of you doing it in a day or 2 days
going to that
safely.
You're going to that stage where it's actually like taking effect on your life. That's taking years off your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Big time. Like, I had one or two weight cuts like that, and it's just never again.
I was just adding up the pounds here for the last time you did a bad weight cut again. Was it Chris Stringer?
Oh my God, lads. Worst weight cut ever.
It was like 84 pounds, which is about a stone. Wasn't it?
No, it wouldn't be pounds. 84 pounds. Jesus. Just my total. Like, we're walking out.
But then I added up wrong.
No, 6.9
kilos. 6.9
kilos.
What's holy that? Shit.
You had to lose 6.9 kilos.
What was that again? What's that?
Overnight.
I'm really bad at
So that would be about 16 pounds or so.
Is it?
Yeah.
How many pounds?
6.9. Hold on. Calculator.
Oh, we have to get the calculators out now.
We put in an extra digit there.
We're mathematical geniuses here on Rambling Rhinos.
It's about 15 and a half.
Yeah, about 16 pounds roughly. Yeah.
Over a stone.
Yeah.
He did that in a day, did you?
A night, yeah. A night.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrific, lads.
What'd you do, like drive around covered in black sacks for 10 hours?
I remember when I stepped up on the scales for the official weigh-in, and I was like 0.3 off, lads. And I literally was like, I shed a tear. I was like, oh, please. I was like, horrible. Like, it was like the biggest task in the world to get rid of it. It was like,
that's the real fight.
And that was back when, like, I didn't have much muscle mass and I wasn't like, I couldn't suck it out of much muscle back then. Like, you know, it was horrific. Horrific. It was like the worst experience I've ever been through.
And he made sure not to do that again for that reason.
Oh, so yeah.
These guys at a professional level.
Was this the same day weigh-in or?
No. Night before, I just had a bad cut.
Yeah.
I just had a bad cut, man. Didn't have a great camp. Still a good fight. Good fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Think I won it, personally. But you got the decision. Not going to hold against
him. Okay. Now, how did you feel in the fight after going
through
the cut? I actually
felt grand, but I was the aggressor. I was going forward a lot, like, you know what I mean? So I felt good. He didn't put any pressure on me, you see.
Yeah.
So I think if he put a lot of pressure on me and put a lot of wrestling exchanges in there, probably would have gassed me out very quick, I'd say. Okay. And it was a strange rule set as well. It was 3x3 minute rounds, and I was used to, like, you know, 3 fights. That's what I thought it was going to be.
It was kind of a
tournament. It was a tournament.
Yeah,
you were a European pro title. Yeah.
Eek. Yes.
Yeah, that was really tough.
He went on to win it, in fairness.
Yeah. That was really tough cut, that.
What about the recovery period, if you can even call it that? If you've come through that cut, that time between you've stepped off the scale, so you're done, and you've made it to the next day, regardless of what happens in the fight. What's that recovery like for you?
It's obviously not going to be as efficient as it would if you were cutting less weight.
Yeah.
But you just have to make sure you're hydrating properly, get electrolytes into you, get good carbohydrates into you. But you have to do it at a pace that your body's allowing you to.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, it's like having your eyes are hungrier than your belly, like, you know what I mean? It's the same concept. You need to be very careful, like, you know.
People that aren't in the sport, like, it's not like, oh, you've made your weight, now you can go have a 3-course
meal.
No,
you can't do that.
You're full after 2 mouthfuls of whatever.
And you have to respect your body as well, because at the end of the day, you're looking to perform the next day.
Yeah.
This isn't like, the fight isn't the weight cut, so you're not going to go off and eat a load of sweets and chocolate because you haven't eaten that shit in a long time.
Celebrate with a good.
I have a bit of chocolate now at the night, like, you know what I mean? Because it, like, it's just something I want. It's more of a mental thing, like, but you have to eat so clean all day, like, you know what I mean? And you have to just get everything proper into you and making sure it's all calculated properly, like all the nutrients you're getting in.
But this is the thing, like, all it took for you or me or whoever is one time for that to happen, and you make sure it never happens again.
Oh,
like,
you have one bad cut, lads. That's so it. All you need is one bad
these
experience.
These guys, it's on a continuous thing with them where they keep leaving a lot of weight to cut last minute.
I remember.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I remember, what was it? I never forget the time. Well, this, like, Gleison Tebow was like, got packed in muscle. He's packed full of muscle.
Yeah.
But I remember he took a fight on 2 weeks' notice and he was 82 kilos and he got down to 70. How the fuck did he do that?
That's 2 stone.
How did he do that?
Wow. That's 2 stone.
Oh, 2 stone.
Fucking hell.
Patrick.
Careful now.
2 old stones, though.
Two whole stones.
Stones.
You're right as well. You do learn from, because even for my, like, say, pro debut, I was like fighting Smullen, and I was 71.5 the night before meeting you in the sauna and getting down to, say, 65.9 for the next day. And then the next fight, then I was like, literally, You were there, sure. You were in the. Yeah. We were roommates ahead of my next fight, and then I was literally on weight going to bed the night before. I was grand, like, you know, there was no issue. But as you said, mate, you do, or you should anyway. You should learn from it, so you don't put yourself in that shit position again, like where you're just.
I know it's like it's not great for your body, but in a way, like, you know, because you go through the bad experience, you're very particular about your weight cuts after that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go through these bad experiences and they have a good purpose to future weight cuts, you know?
Yeah.
Like you know, sometimes guys have bad weight cuts all the time, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they don't learn from it. Like, so you learn from them, you know?
What do we do with those people and those fighters and athletes who do go through a bad weight cut
They probably do it already, but not as strict on it. They have to make a certain weight
2 weeks beforehand.
A few days or a few weeks beforehand to make sure they're keeping on track. And like a big thing I want to say is like, what are their team to do with this? Like, I know like it's all him and he has to cut the weight, but like, as regards their team, they should have some sort of call on their athletes. If he's that much out of weight, like, he's at a danger to himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And his career.
Like, do you remember up in when Redger fought Park?
Yeah.
That show I was meant to fight on as well. And your man Steve Owens came in at 77 point something, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was meant to be fighting at 70 kilos.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Like, I just wouldn't turn up, lads.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's no way I'm going up to them scales.
same was with your man.
But, like, that's when it comes into, like, it mightn't necessarily be his fault. Like, of course it is.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, he was obviously going through things. Something happened medically, maybe, or maybe psychologically he wasn't with it for a few weeks. You know, it's happened, like, you know what I mean? It's happened to me. That's happened to me in the stringer cut, like, had a bad cut. You know, personal life got in the way, whatever gets in the way. Like, but at the end of the day, right there what you said, like, the team has to make a call then. Is it worth going to the scales?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? At that stage,
it's about knowing your athlete as well. Like say if you one of our guys is fighting and it's the same scenario, he's about 15-16 pounds out from weighing the day before or something like that. What would your call on it be? What would you make a call, or would
16 pounds, how much time out?
Just the day before weighing.
I'd ring and I'd ask for a catchway.
Yeah.
And I'd give my apologies.
Yeah.
Or I'd give away some purse. Yeah. At an amateur level, it's usually not a massive deal.
Yeah.
And if the fight doesn't go ahead, it doesn't go ahead. That's just the situation you're in. Yeah. You have to be content with that. Yeah. But if it's a professional fight, professional level,
yeah,
it has to be a catchway.
Yeah.
You can't go over 5 kilos, man. Yeah. It's that simple. Over 5 kilos, you're affecting your performance.
Yeah.
And you're affecting your life. And your mental health.
Exactly.
Like, I think that a lot of the time, the reason why a lot of these guys have repetitively bad weight cuts, like Johnny Hendricks and Gastelum and Anthony Johnson for a long time, is because they've been through so many bad cuts that they're psychologically broken from it. That they have this, like, reverse effect, that they can't stop eating because they're, like, their bodies are subconsciously afraid of starving.
Yeah.
So they're constantly eating and eating and keeping themselves well fed. And then it gets to it, and then it gets to the weigh-in day, and then they're just like, oh, sure, I have to lose all this weight now.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's like you actually need to psychologically really get over it. It's like getting over an injury. If you injure yourself, you're psychologically conscious of your injury, even if it's okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I'd agree with that.
You need to get over it. It's like you went through a traumatic experience that your nervous system has reacted to.
Yeah.
And they're just repeatedly, they're in the UFC, they're like, Johnny Hendricks is like a champion. Anthony Johnson was, like, you know, contender.
Yeah.
I mean, like, these guys had for years bad weight cuts.
But do these guys not work with nutritionists and have meal planners and preppers and people working around them?
It's like personal training. You can't force someone to do something they don't want to do. There's only so much they can do. Yeah, some people look to aid their own journey, or some people look for a crutch to lean on.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, it doesn't matter if Johnny Hendricks got in Mike Dolce, because Mike Dolce can't ram the right food in his mouth when he goes down to the shop for an hour.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The only person that's in control of what they put in their mouth is themselves.
Is you.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
Like, Mike Dolce might be giving them everything right.
What's that?
What
did you say?
What the fuck did you say, motherfucker?
chill.
And on that note, it's been a great podcast. while UFC 217 was mentioned, I know we talked about Garbrandt and Dillashaw. The big, the main event of the night is Bisping GSP.
GSP.
Andy Murphy, give me your take.
Take it away.
It's mad because I was actually watching a clip a guy used to like as well, Chael Sonnen this morning, was talking about that. I think like when BetOdds first opened up, like GSP was like a huge favorite. I think now it's kind of turned to BSP.
BSP.
Bisping
St. Pierre.
Trademark. But no, I think it's kind of like, yeah, he's a new favorite. But I don't know, it's such a tough one to call. I think, like, you know, Chael even mentioned that, you know, he's got GSP, who's probably been the best wrestler in the UFC, go up against, you know, Bisping, who is obviously from the UK. Obviously, he's in the sport years, so he obviously has decent wrestling, but the UK isn't renowned for having solid wrestling. When you look at, say, if GSP was to make a comeback, he wouldn't go down to welterweight and fight Woodley in a title fight, because Woodley has a lot of the similar attributes to GSP in terms of very solid wrestling, but he has a knockout power. Whereas maybe Bisping is a more winnable fight because, you know, obviously the striking's there, and if Bisping can keep his range, then it might help. But I just think it's going to be the same as before, where you have GSP come in with a very solid jab and hit that takedown. But it all depends on can Bisping then get back to feet, like I think. But I think it's very hard to keep Bisping down. He's known for having a good game in terms of getting back to feet, good scrambling. Yeah. So it makes for an interesting fight. I genuinely can't call it, really. I'm just intrigued to watch it.
I can call it.
Hold on.
Do you think five? I'm thinking in my head. I'm thinking 5-round GSP decision.
I can definitely call it.
But I think it comes down to like, can Bisping get off his back and get back firing some shots and maybe knock GSP out? Like, you know, because of the size difference.
Hold on. This is a tremendous occasion. Mick actually has a definite answer on something. He's not on the fence. This is an offense answer.
Going to repeat everything that I just said and then it's a little bit what you said.
Come on now. You can't let us down now. It has to be a definite. No maybes or buts, none of that.
I think Bisping is going to be made an example of by GSP.
Okay, round type.
Okay,
prediction.
I think it's going to go the full five, is the same as you, Andy.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to obviously start on the feet, but I think same thing. I don't think GSP is going to have any trouble taking him down. And I know he's got a really good takedown defense.
Yeah.
But I think GSP's wrestling is better than that.
Statistically speaking,
if we look at the details,
I think he's just going to dominate
that word
for most rounds.
Just on that one before Kenny even gets in, John, when you talk about the takedown and John, like, defending takedowns, you know he's going to go for it. But like, I remember looking back at, say, Redzer v. Conor Dillon a few weeks back as well, when Redzer submitted Conor in some grappling match. You know the takedown's coming.
Oh, Battle Zone.
Yeah, you know the takedown's coming, but yeah, you just can't defend it. I remember watching that. I must have looked back at that clip. The Redzer had that hit that double leg on Connor. I must have looked at it 10 times, just tapped the head and was gone. Yeah. Each time, I didn't really see it coming. Like, so I think Bisping will be preparing in camp for this takedown that's going to come. And we talked about this before, as the idea of, like, you know, don't think of a bottle of water and think of a bottle of water. Don't think of a takedown, you end up getting taken down. Yeah. You know, think of a takedown, you're getting taken down. So I think he's going to get taken out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Man, 100%. He's gonna dominate him for most of the fight. There might be a few times where Bisping might get back up, but I don't think it'll take much for GSP to get back up.
I'd just like
down.
To put it out there that I love GSP. I think that he's a legend, and I want to see him kick Bisping's ass.
Yeah.
But let's not take away from the fact that he's carrying muscle that he's never carried before. He's
true.
4 years out of competition. The last time he fought against Johnny Hendricks, he did get beaten up a little bit now. Let's face it.
Oh, he did.
He left at the right time.
He did.
Yeah. And now he's carrying more muscle. And everybody knows in the past in fights and stuff, sometimes when people move up in weight and they carry a bit too much muscle, it affects their cardio. Although GSP is a freak of nature. That's the only thing I'd have to go against him, those three factors. Got a little bit better in the last fight. 4 years off, carry more muscle.
Yeah.
So
good
4 points. Years ago, he was fighting at 170. Bisping fights at 185. He's likely to be closer to 200 on the night.
Yeah.
What weight do you think GSP is going to be at for the night? He can make the 185.
He's a big guy as well.
I think he's going to deliberately
drop a little.
I think he's going to deliberately be a little bit lighter. I think he's going to do like a Mayweather McGregor job. He's going to have that speed. He wants that speed advantage. Mm. Yeah. I think that Bisping's very tough though. Like I just think, and I think that Bisping has great striking and has great takedown defense. I just think that GSP is going to do what he always does, and he's going to be extremely calculated, extremely methodical in what he does. His timing's going to be right. He's not like, when have you ever seen GSP gas or overexert himself? Yeah. Really, like, I mean, like, he and does things to a T all the time.
That's the thing. And that's when he's at full time. So,
you know, when
it will be interesting to see.
You know, when he comes back, he's going to be like, he doesn't come back unless he knows he's ready.
Yeah. And his high percentage stuff is just always on point. Like you said about coming in a little bit lighter than Bisping. So he'll have that bit of speed, like that jab. And again, I was watching Chael Sonnen talk about this morning. Chael fought Bisping and Chael has trained with GSP. And his take on it was that, you know, GSP had the better wrestling, the better grappling, the better takedowns. And also he said the other thing that was alarming was he just had more speed about him than Bisping had. He said Bisping was very tough, but he's on the side that GSP will win the fight, and I agree with him on that.
And to be honest with you, I kind of like Bisping as well, but I can't stand listening to him talk either. Like, it drives me crazy sometimes.
He's fierce mouthy.
He's so mouthy. Like,
but he's not even smart mouthy. He's just
He retracts it a lot in all his smack talk in press conferences and interviews. He's like, I respect GSP and he's a nice lad and all this crack, like, you know what I mean? But he's still a dick. He's a fucking little, you know what I mean? It's like, what do you
what way you feel?
You know what I mean? You like me? Do you not like me? I'm very confused. Like, do you see when he confronted him? I know, it's like fucking Psycho X and me. Do you see him confront GSP at one back of one of the press conferences where he's like, don't you ever put your fucking hands on me again, like, you know.
And who said that?
I felt like saying, well, man, you're putting your hands on GSP first, you poxy twat. If that was me, man, like, I don't know, I'd be in a wrestling match right there and then, I'm telling you. I can't hold, like, GSP's a nice guy, you see, and he doesn't even sound right when he's saying, fuck off. He was like, fuck off. And I was like, no, George.
Go back to normal, George.
Go back to be nice, quickly.
Fuck off you.
Oh, fuck off you. You hit me. Oh, man, it was so funny, wasn't it, though, Andy? It was so crazy.
Fuck off you. You jackass.
Oh, you don't, you.
He spent it to his time with Jean-Claude Van Damme. That's his problem.
And then he turned around and he was like, there was a kid there that was signing an autograph. And he was like, come on, we take a picture. And then the kid sprinted around the car. And then George's face was like, what? Oh, that's so funny.
Oh,
it was like the most awkward confrontation ever.
Because it's so not GSP.
Yeah, and it's like Bisping knows that he touched him first. He instigated a push. Like, I mean,
it's all mind games.
But just a quick one. Like, there's two fights on that card that really should be, I think, on separate cards. I think GSP Bisping is a main event in itself, fair enough. But then co-main having Dillashaw and Garbrandt. I think you could build that whole fight up, like, and have a mad series into the whole alpha male thing, blah, blah, you
just
know.
Just the lighter weights don't have an appeal to the fans,
I think it's a bigger fight to sell, like, you know.
And you've got the 14-0 undefeated Joanna.
Yeah, she ain't losing.
And
she's
Rose.
Not losing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I think Rose isn't going to do too great there, if I'm honest.
I think
they're running out of contenders for her.
But it's the same as Demetrius Johnson. Where does she go next?
Well, I'll be honest with you, man. That feckin' one from Poland, what's her name? I saw her at one of the Bahamas. She fought her before.
Shevchenko? Or Kovalkiewicz?
Kovalkiewicz, the other Polish one. That was a good fight.
I think she's fighting this weekend.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she was doing well in that fight. She was catching her. She was demoralizing her, you know. Like, do you know what I like what GSP said? And this is the truth, because as, like, my spiel from before, previous podcast, is about, you know, the narcissistic mindset and how like a champion, you kind of need probably the disorder to be that obsessive to be push towards greatness, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like Bisping and Joanna have that as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Do you ever notice that all the champions are, like, unbelievable shit talkers?
Yeah.
Or they're, like, you know, John Jones, like, stead addicts and coke heads. Like, I mean, like, they're just unhappy in some way, aren't they? Like, I mean, they're just, like, I feel like that Bisping and GSP is psychologically savvy. And I feel like he got this nail in the head in this part of the press conference with GSP when he went, do you know if I talk to Jin, you know if I did to GSP a few years ago.
Or it's a Bisping, sorry. Oh, lads. Oh, God, the action's hilarious, isn't it, lads?
But if I talked to Bisping like 10 years ago, he would have said the happiest thing that he wanted was the belt.
Yeah.
All I want is the belt. All I want is to be champion. And he was like, now I can hear it in his voice. He's still unhappy. You can see by the way he goes on. He's not humbled anymore.
There's
a hole inside of him that he cannot fill.
Ooh.
And I will expose that. And I was he's psychologically sad. And that's very true. Like, that's the hole that's in
them.
That. And when you expose that hole is how you beat them.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
That's psychologically savvy. He understands how it works. Like,
love that.
Yeah,
and he wouldn't have been like a champion like that. You see, he would have been the example of the opposite to that.
Yeah.
GSP is just a martial artist, isn't he? And then Chael Sonnen said again, I hate to bring him back up again. I know I've been blabbering, but I did watch that clip, and he said Chael retired on the same night. Would you believe that George retired? He was co-main that night. Chael Sonnen was the night that GSP
retired against Hendricks.
Let's say, yeah. And he said the difference between the two is when he said Chael, when he said he retired, he said, when I retired, I went off for 6 months and I just lived the lifestyle of a retired athlete. Like, he said, you know, you see George, like, you know, he's going in, he's still training, like, he wasn't really stopped. He said he's still been athletic, still been doing gymnastics,
martial
been doing things to improve himself. Exactly. He epitomizes a martial artist, like, so.
Yeah, well, he's not obsessive with greatness though, GSP. Like, you can sense that in him. He's like he was content with retiring for a few years.
Yeah.
Like, he loves his gymnastics, he loves his Kyushin karate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he loves doing loads of different things. Yeah. He's not like, I have to be the greatest of all time. Like, I am so obsessed with that. Like, you know, he's just living his life. Like, you know?
One last one on the 217 card before we lose the run of ourselves altogether. Yeah. Joe Duffy is back fighting on the UFC. He's up against James Vick.
Oh, yeah.
I recognize the name. Don't remember any of his fights, though.
He's tight enough stand-up, James Vick, if I think back.
Who did he lose against last? Poirier.
He's tall enough as well, as he is. Like,
Poirier was his last fight, was it? That's ages ago.
Duffy's last fight.
Long time ago,
211, or UFC 211. No, wait, no.
Oh, no, I thought it was 2011.
Polo Reyes.
Like,
UFC 211. He's a few kind of contrary fights in there over the last kind of 3 or 4 years. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Joe Duffy or James Vick's last fight?
Duffy's last fight was Magdaddy.
Oh. That Swedish fucker.
On the Jimmy Manoa card.
Yeah, that would have been in Sweden, was it?
And he had the loss to Poirier at 195.
Oh, lads, just a quick note there. Do you know who I can't wait to see again? And he looked like an animal last. And I don't know what's actually going to happen to him since. It's Alexander Gustafsson.
Yeah.
My God,
really?
That performance.
He did an interview during the week. He said that he is more than happy to wait his time. He's not going anywhere. He's had a longer stretch between fights. If DC is going to fight...
Oh, yeah. Your man Volkan. Whatever.
Yes.
Oh, no time. That's his nickname, isn't it? I have no time.
Who's Jameer?
He sounded like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Now, he reckons Cormier will flatten him and then he wants his rematch.
Right. Well, that's if Cormier don't get hit by him.
That's
if
man,
he
that's
hits,
also
like,
true.
Manu got like absolutely cracked. I fancy Manu in that fight and he just got walked through.
Yeah.
So, I think, I guess everyone has a puncher's chance, but yeah, if it engages that whole wrestling game and that, then there's only one winner, isn't there? And that's DC. The
shorter, stockier.
Yeah,
George Erstocker. Any thoughts on it's not in the show notes for today. But any thoughts on the changes in Bellator? James Gallagher is out for a while. You fought Brian Moore. He's got bumped up to main event for Dublin. Any opinion?
Yeah, sorry.
So who's going to take the lead on this?
Who's he fighting in the main event?
He's got AJ McKee. AJ. Is who, they've always talked about AJ McKee fighting Gallagher. That's the rivalry they've given. And now, you know, Brian's got main event against AJ McKee. But I'm kind of like, why was there never a fight of AJ versus maybe James in Dublin? Is he still trying to just keep him away, or what's going on? Because I know AJ's 9-0, is he? And James is 6 or 7-0.
6 or 7-0.
I think that we're still in this kind of favoritism thing when it comes from the SBG platform and team. Like, you know, it might come across that I'm a bit bitter, but I'm not. I'm actually like happy for martial arts in general in Ireland. Like if a team has to get it, it's going to be obviously SBG. Like, because that's Conor's team. That's naturally the way it is. Not great for the rest of Irish MMA, take or give it, but that's the way it is, like, you know what I mean? You have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's, like, an applicable main event for Bellator. Like, it discredits their promotion, if you ask me. Yeah. Like, even James Gallagher, like, James Gallagher is popular social media-wise, but he hasn't fought anyone significant. Like, let's be straight, like, look at his share dog record. There isn't anyone, he hasn't fought anyone even, like, in the top 10 in Ireland. I mean, like, he needs to fight someone significant till you get a main event. Yeah. Like, even Machida wasn't, like, a massive threat. He's very old. He's only popular because of he's Machida's brother.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very beatable opponent as well. Like, now, Brian has actually gone through, if anything, Brian actually has a more credible record than James. Yeah. He's actually fought a lot of those guys. Brian trained with us for years, like. You know, like,
I know Rachel, he's top guy as well.
And he was doing all right in the stand up, Brian. Although, like, it seemed like one of those fights that was inevitable where it was going to go. I think, right, Brian, that weight was it 70?
Not 100%.
Not 100%, yeah, against him, against Daniel Wetchel.
Yeah,
I don't think Brian was ready for that fight. And to be honest with you, Brian has still to kind of fight someone top caliber and beat them, you know. Like, you know, we've all had losses. Like, you know, I've had losses where I've beaten top guys and lost against top guys. But I think Brian needs a couple more of those beating the top level guys to get to that stage. And I think that could be a hard factor on him come Bellator main event, because he's on that huge stage now. He's fighting an undefeated young prospect.
Yeah.
And that young prospect, AJ McKee, has fought good guys. Like, you know? And I think it could be a tough... Like, of course, like, if I was in Brian's shoes, man, I'd be taking these fights left, right, and centre.
Totally.
He's taking opportunities. They're throwing at him. Who the fuck wouldn't take him? But that's my outlook on it, that he's not going to be ready for the occasion, and it might get to him. Or he might go through it.
Yeah.
But personally, from my experience from sparring with Brian, even though I haven't sparred him in years, and I haven't seen him change much of his style up, it's generally the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that could be tricky coming into a fight against a tricky character like AJ McKee.
Yeah. I think they just needed to put an Irish guy in that main event.
But that's the thing, like jumping the gun like that and doing that. Like, another guy that I have to bring up, and, like, I have to be assertive in what I say these things, and I need to bring up my mind about it. The Richie Kiley fight against world champion on Bama is a total discredit to the rest of Irish MMA. It's complete like, of course Richie's going to take the fight. Yeah. And of course it's going to be like, yeah, well, the rest of them are just, you know, they're jealous because I got them. Like, no, man. Like, it's bad all around for Irish MMA.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to take the opportunity when it's given to you. Like, and of course it was given to you because it's the same kind of route you're going as Gallagher following him after Conor. Wearing the suits, doing the shit talk. Like, you know what I mean?
Hey, just out of interest, what's his actual record?
He's 2-0.
2-0.
In pro. What's his amateur
record? 0-2 or 2-2 amateur? Because I remember...
So he's only have a total of 4 fights?
Well, I remember...
Or 5 fights or something.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, like... Oh, sorry, you were saying something about the Battle Zone.
I was saying, Battle Zone back in the Regency.
I was there that night, yeah.
And he got sparked out cold by a young, I think, Nicholas Lewin or something, I remember. Now, in fairness... We all know Richie's got good stand-up on that. But I'm going to take a bit of a different route on this, right? Because Richie's 2-0 as a pro, right? But then you've got other guys in the same gym that are very solid welterweights as well, don't you? Like, obviously, there's Queeley in there. You've got Kiefer Crosby, who's done very well on Bama as well. Probably, you know, much more MMA experience.
Yeah, he's tough, out of this one.
Tough
too.
Dude as well. Like, yeah, you know,
very true. He is tough.
He, like... I'm just wondering, you know, I'm just intrigued. I wonder what the feeling is from other teammates at the same weight when you have a higher record, a better record, and you've performed at a very good level, and then you have this guy come in and, you know, he goes 2-0 and he's got a following, he's got people buying tickets to see him, but he's only won 2 fights.
He's only had 2.
Do you know what? That's actually a very good point.
It's a team sport, but then they, you know, you're on your own individual path to, you know, achieving whatever you want to achieve. I'm just intrigued because, like I said, that SBG gym is top quality. These guys are a very, very good level in there. But I'm just wondering, would there be ever any trouble in camp when guys are getting maybe ahead of the pecking order?
Well, I've never thought of that. Like, I honestly think because that, of course there is. Like, I think that's a no-brainer question. I don't think there's only question about that. Like, of course, if someone who's 2-0 is getting, like, I actually originally thought when I saw, like, an Instagram story from Bama, I thought it was a Lonsdale title shot. And even then, I was like, what? Like, you know, you need a couple more fights to get, like, next thing is the world title. Like, that's joke. Like Richie's good. Like, I remember Richie from the kickboxing days, but he's not at that level.
Yeah.
And even if he does win, which everybody has a puncher's chance, is it good for his camp, as Andy says, like with the guys that probably are more deserving of that title shot? Like, is it good for the morale of the team? Like, probably not.
No.
And is it good for Irish MMA?
Definitely.
It's terrible for Irish MMA. Oh, atrocious. Yeah. It is, like.
Lahore has 9 fight streak. He's 13-1. Taking him on. His last 9 fights, 5 of them he's finished in the first round.
He's fighting.
Yeah. 5 of them he's finished in the first round. 2 of them
have gone the
distance. I never checked his
record or not, that fella.
And the other 2 have finished in the second round.
And the other thing you have to take on, Jesus. And do you ever think
of impressive?
Yeah. You know, and do you know the the other thing you have to take in consideration as well is what you have to think about is the name it gives to Bama.
Yeah.
Like, what this sort of credibility does it give to Bama where he can jump the pecking order like that? Do you know? Like, at the end of the day, like, if you have, like, a show where it's actually building up contenders, in the short run, you're getting quick ticket sales, this lad's a shit talker, like, let's bring him up fast, but if you actually done it the right way, like if you actually built someone up, like even the UFC, they fast track Conor, but Conor still had to go through a few contenders get to where he needed to get to.
He's also an exception.
Like, like at the end of the day, you need to build this to get to where you need to be, to build marketability with your own promotion long term.
Yeah.
So if you make someone have, he definitely need 8 fights. Like, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
If he was on an 8-fight winning streak.
For a world title fight, man, you need to have
minimum.
6-8 fights.
I'm going to throw something out there.
Get out of town.
Get it out of your system, Andy. Come on.
Aaron Chalmers has the same record. Aaron Chalmers at the minute is 2-0.
Chalmers.
As a welterweight.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know.
They
should be
fighting for
Aaron
a world
Chalmers
title.
2-0. So, if Richie wins,
he'll probably get a world title.
Like Aaron Chalmers get to fight for a title.
If he fights for it, if he
wins. He's
in the public eyes.
Yeah.
He'll sell tickets. Like,
you know, Jody
Shue. It's becoming a bit of a show, but the thing with Conor was he was the first guy to do what he was doing, like, whereas a lot of others are now following suit.
You can't, that's what I was trying to say in, like, my previous podcast. You know, tune in and take a few notes. But, like, you can't follow the blueprint of another man like that. You know?
That's true.
Yeah. It's like you have to be your own man. And the problem is that there's only so far you can go with that, you know?
But
you know, at the end of the day, like, they're getting these fights.
Yeah.
They're still getting the fights. James Gallagher still is, like, main event in Bellator. Hasn't fought anyone, like, ridiculously tough, like, at his level. Like, Brian Moore, to be fair to him, has fought tough guys. He just hasn't had a steady... He hasn't fought even 4, like, kind of guys, real top level, you know, to solidify him at that. You know what I mean?
I think that's what's going to be dangerous for AJ McKee then coming over here, because I don't think Bellator have tested James the way that maybe they're testing now AJ McKee with Brian. Like, I think Brian is very, very tough and obviously durable.
That's the
and
thing.
He's going to pose a threat now to AJ McKee, whereas I don't think some of the guys that James has fought have been a threat to his style and standard. Like,
I definitely think Brian's going to be a tougher fight than what James is going to be. Definitely. Yeah. But the only thing that James is, James is potentially more skilled.
Yes.
Brian has, he's a jack of all trades, and he's particularly good at certain things, but he's not exceptional in any particular area.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's the only thing. James has got specialties. He's very, like, when James takes your back, you are in a bit of trouble now.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stand up, not particularly a threat. Takedowns are good, but when he takes your back, you're like, whoa. You can't say about any position, really, with Brian, or you're in a lot of danger.
Yeah.
A massive amount of danger. That's the only thing. So Brian can either eke out and get a good win, or AJ is going to, he's going to have some sort of, I've done a little bit of study into him, nothing crazy, but he's going to be like, he has a few areas now where he catches you and he's going to finish it.
Yeah.
He hasn't lost a fight since his amateur days. Second or third fight. He hasn't lost a fight since 2013.
Well, how much is amateur record?
This
there,
is AJ.
Ken's like Jamie out of the Joe Rogan podcast, isn't he? Get that up there, Jamie.
As an amateur, AJ was 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 1. And as a pro, he's 9-0.
That's a good record, man. That's really solid. Good. And those amateurs train, and especially in the States.
They and he's fight. Already fought 3 times this year.
Oh, he's very active then as well.
As a pro. He had a unanimous decision win over Brandon Phillips, Bellator 171.
And what's Brandon Phillips' record?
At the time, finished 6-2.
So
AJ was 6-0 going into the fight.
And he was
6-2.
That's good.
He beat Dominic Mazzotta at Bellator 178.
What was his record?
12-1.
He beat a 12-1 guy. Mm. See, that's what you're looking at, you see. You know what I mean? You need to be beating these guys with 8-2, 8-1, 8-4. Like those guys with really good,
really good on your score.
Like
on
at the end of the day, like, you know, like you look at Artem Lobov, even, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's a jack of all trades guy again, Artem. But he has beaten some guys, like, you know, he's beaten some guys at our top level.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so records are for DJs. You need to kind of fight them top caliber guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right, we move on.
Yeah,
not to like make a dramatic cut in it.
I'm glad we cleared that all.
Yeah,
wanted to touch on because of like there's been a really good competition buzz in here of late. There's been more medals that are coming in the door. There's more competition style classes that are happening Monday mornings here have gone competition style. Wednesday evenings with the no-gi stuff has gone competition style. You guys have both been off and abroad and everything else coming back. Maybe talk a little bit about, we talk an awful lot about the competition mindset and the preparation for the MMA side of things, but what about the competition mindset and preparation for the jiu-jitsu side of things?
It's along the same mindset, really.
Yeah.
You just got the thing about, like, everything needs to be a priority, but everything needs to be, like, you know, in different stages of a priority. But, like, at the end of the day, it all stems down to, you have to have a real balanced mindset. MMA is a little bit different because there's a lot more on the line. You know, there's a bit less pressure in jiu-jitsu, but there's still the same equal amount of work that needs to go in. Like, you know what I mean?
For some people, there is that all that pressure is the same as an MMA fight, but that's because they've never fought an MMA fight.
Yeah, I suppose we know the difference. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, but it comes down to that thing where you need to be very efficient with your techniques. You need to go to your classes like all the time. But on top of that, you can't just go to your classes and think you're doing enough.
Yeah.
If you're doing competitions, then that's different. You could come to 5 evening classes a week and you're just doing the evening classes. But then when you're doing the competitions, you have to think about doing another 2 or 3 mornings a week or during the day where you're drilling specific techniques that fit your style. Mm. And then you have to do chains where you do like a takedown to a pass to a submission.
Yeah.
And then you could add in your partner, doing like an escape and you doing the counter to the escape to a submission.
And it all becomes muscle memory.
Yeah, so you have to do that muscle memory training. And then another important bit when you're doing those other 3 mornings a week, say, is that you need to have like a brainstorming mindset. So the most I've ever learned when it comes to training hasn't been from the classes, because that's a general thing for the whole class. Mm. You need to go into specific stuff for you. So you need to go into your own training. Like the best training I've ever gotten, ever, is training with Andy on his own or Mick on his own or the three of us training together, because we brainstorm scenarios. But what if this happens? So we'll move here. And what about your we tweak little things that make big differences in competition. And then we drill it. And then the things in the classes are just things that are added to that. So in my opinion, that's where you learn the most.
Yeah.
And sparring actually comes last. Sparring is like one of those things that is technique, drill, and sparring. But they're all as equally as important as each other, even though they're in a pecking order.
You can't just spar all the time. No. You're not progressing.
You don't learn.
You're wearing your body out.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu and martial arts is exercising the mind, not the body. Yeah. If that's the case, just, you know, get on a spin bike or something. You know what I mean?
That's why these competition classes are great that we started doing, is because, number one, it gets you thinking when you don't have time to think. And that's a big thing in competition. And we do drills of takedown and followed by a pass straight away. That's one example. And it gets used to, okay, what takedowns do I subconsciously know here when I'm put on the spot, you know? And then naturally, you just, when you get them down, you're naturally passing. Whatever pass you like to do, that's what's going to come out. It's your subconscious. What is really stuck in there is what comes out in these drilling classes, because you don't have time to think. So you just have to rely on what you've already learned and what you have really drilled. And then that shows in the competition classes. And then obviously we roll as well, so that you get a good taste of drilling and high intense drilling and rolling. So that's basically what we've added recently as well. So, and the girls are doing great at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Competition wise.
Cleaning up.
Like Annette did the BJJ Revolution Cup there recently. I know it's an in-house thing, but it's still very good. She got gold, and Emer has got like golds and silvers there for the last month or so. She's cleaning up. But there's a reason behind it, is because the last while those girls have been on that mat morning and evening. And that's the only way you get results in competition, is if you put in the work. You only get out of it what you put into it. And that's exactly.
And you have to remember that Emer does she does personal training with me actually on the side as well. So
yeah,
she does
exactly.
She does a lot of prehab work, like. And that's another thing that's in the pecking order, but is equally as important as the rest. Because if you drill, if you spar, if you do technique, you need to take a pit stop. And the pit stop is your mobility and your prehab and your strength work. So you need to be doing that as well, because then you're just going to be injury prone, shit like that. You know what I mean?
Do you like, because you're coaching a lot of the BJJ here, but do you find like the girls often pick up things a bit quicker than the guys? Because I, just from my own experience, when I'm teaching things like boxer size and stuff like that, I always find a lot of time with lads who maybe haven't trained before, done much for, all they want to do is get to the end product. Like, say, hit a pad as hard as you can. Whereas I find it sometimes can be annoying. I won't lie, it can be a little bit irritating. Sometimes, you know, you get asked the same question all the time. It's like, but how do I hit the pad? How do I, you know, what way should my knuckle be and all this? And they're kind of, you know, they really delve into the technical aspects of it, and then that gets them to their destination that bit quicker than the guys who maybe are just thinking about the destination without, shit, but how do I get to that destination?
I know what you're saying, and I don't think it's a matter of men and women being different. I think it's each individual person.
Right, okay.
There's the people out there that will want to get that knowledge, like men and women.
Yeah.
You'd be like, you know the ones when they ask you, but why am I doing this? Why am I putting my elbow here? And why am I doing this? And then you'll have women and men on the other side, or they're just like busting through the first part of the technique like to get to the submission, you know? Yeah. I don't think it's a difference between men and women. I just said it's a difference between minds.
Maybe it's individual based. It's just something I found a lot of the time. Maybe I've just had more ladies come to the class who seems that like a lot of them seem to ask questions, and guys seems to just want to bash the pad
for the big majority, women do break everything down.
A little bit.
I think it depends, like, as well, because like some people don't think enough about what they do, and some people think too much about what they do.
That's true.
Like, sometimes dealing with someone that's too particular about technique is as hard to deal with someone that just goes for it. Do you know, like, you need someone that's happy medium, that is particular enough but still goes for it first.
Yeah.
Like, isn't afraid to make a mistake and then learn from the mistake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all about your adaptation to failure, really, like how well you adapt to it, like, you know.
Exactly.
And some people can't handle it, so they're so perfect about things that if they get it wrong, then it'll be like, oh, fuck, I can't do that wrong. Like, yeah, you know, exactly. And it's like, it really affects their training, and it's like a mental struggle.
Exactly.
And some people just go crazy, and they do shit, like, sporadically, and it's like, no, you're doing that wrong, and they go, okay, and they do it again, like, you know, and it's like, it takes ages to teach them, because they're just so in the moment, you know.
Exactly.
But they're not great getting anywhere. So it's like, you need a happy medium, you know.
But another thing we've been doing, well, I've been doing personally, is that myself and Miles teach, I do what I want to teach for the all levels, and he does what he does. But as regards me for the last month, I find sticking on one position or one scenario for like 3 to 4 weeks is really important, because it really sinks in.
Build that muscle memory.
Yeah, and it gives them options. Okay, these are all the options from this one position. This is what you can do. This is, and then we keep drilling it every class. Just might do a new technique every class or whatever, but we still go over everything we've done so far. And I find that's a big, I've noticed with people rolling that is really sticking as well. So
yeah, muscle memory. Yeah. And the important classes to go into, as you were saying there, was going into the open mat classes and stuff, the drill.
That's where the brainstorming.
That's when the brainstorming comes in.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, with the women leading the way in that regard, we've got new women's classes as well. Yeah. Women only classes, I should say.
Yes. Women, one class per week. Because it's just for 8 weeks, so it's all the run up to Christmas.
Mm.
It's just to give them a feel if they haven't. It's basically for all beginner women who are beginning for the first time jiu-jitsu, are unsure what jiu-jitsu is or whatever. Just come in, give it a try. It's once a week. The option of other classes, participate in other classes, is there as well. So just come in and give it a try. And like I keep saying, you know, just give it one class. Just give it one class. And that's what happened the last time when we were in the last gym we were in. We did like a few weeks of it, and there was 12 women that just said, okay, let's give it a go. And a good few of them stuck around for quite a while. Due to other circumstances, we've only a handful still doing it, but still more than we ever had before. So it's great to get more females in and learn the art.
Sounds. Kickoff date?
7th of November. Excellent. Tuesday, 7th of November, 7:30. And just another thing on the two girls that have been competing recently, they're doing a great job with the little Rhinos BJJ. They've basically nearly took over the classes. Obviously, myself and Miles are here as well. But they're doing a great job, and there's great numbers coming in for the kids. So kids' classes every Monday and Friday at 5:30 as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. Future's looking good.
That's about us, lads.
Oh, should we talk about Copenhagen? Before we go.
Oh, well, seeing as Ireland are after drawing Denmark.
Oh, yeah.
Very true, actually. Yeah.
How was it?
It was...
Oh, tour guide.
It was some crack, wasn't it?
Oh, it was class. I really enjoyed it now, I have to say. Like, I love Copenhagen. I love the free town. That was my favourite part.
Yeah,
that's kind of the weird space where all the kind of... free spirits live.
Yeah,
cycle everywhere.
No, just like
scrubs hang out there.
Right, scrubs.
Yeah. That's where all the scrubs are.
Yeah,
I know what our theme tune this week is.
I will get back. Don't you worry. Oh fuck, man! I thought he was in the toilet. Then.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a small room, slithered around. Nice with my phone there, didn't I?
In case
anyone needs to update or have a check on that, it's on my Facebook page or Instagram page.
Check his news.
Copenhagen itself was deadly as always. Miles' first time there, he loved it.
Yeah, brilliant.
Then the seminar with Rafael Lovato Jr. was fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Got a lot of very basic stuff, basic movement, fundamental stuff, but little details here and there, and that's what makes it complete.
Awesome. Yeah, it made a big difference, yeah.
Yeah. And I got to roll with him.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's good. Yes. I rolled with everyone else except him.
Yeah. You're right too. You could see the flaws, and you knew it was just...
Yeah, like, I knew. I was like, well, take it easy and you'll have had it. Get you next time, all right?
Come on, bring it, you motherfucker.
Call him out.
Well, he was super nice, and he was sound. We actually met him going into Christina there, the hippie commune.
Yeah.
were walking in and he was walking out the day before. And I remember seeing him. I just grabbed Moises' arm. I was like, dude, he's right over there, man. Moises was like, what? Oh, Jesus.
It wasn't that bad, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
And then in my head, I was like, should I go over? Should I say hello? Should I tell him I'm seeing him tomorrow? Should I do this? Yeah. Do that? And then by the time I met up my mind, he was gone.
Super fan.
Big dude.
Yeah, super fan. He's super cool as well.
But it was good. It was worth the trip.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. Yeah, Copenhagen's beautiful.
And Shermoy has been over running with Braulio as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I was over with the boys.
Me old mate.
Me and Braulio besties now.
Braulio, boy. Yeah.
Gracie Barra for life. Andy Ryan, did you love that?
He says that on the phone anytime I go somewhere.
Yeah, you come back, he's like, Gracie Barra, scum. I know what the crack is now, boys. Leaving us up here in HQ. You know, I've messed it really out, like, obviously.
Oh, we're so dead when we go.
Oh, we are.
I'm not back yet.
Yeah. But in fairness, the fact that he called you out on Instagram
was
over
hilarious.
Your tourist videos. Like, yeah.
Yo, Moyes is flat out on that phone, lads.
I went to town on it. I couldn't
fucking go for a shite without him fucking recording.
Yeah, the old Instagram stories are good.
But yeah, you had the Braulio one. You had,
Jake McKenzie
there as well, for Royal Grappling.
Yeah,
all good there?
Yeah, really good seminar there. Yeah, up with our friends up Royal Grappling Academy with Black Belt Roger Dark. It's really good seminar. Really super cool guys up there. And a great facility. And the seminar was like really informative.
Cool. Awesome. Bringing all that knowledge back.
Bringing it down.
Mats.
Bringing it back down.
Never awesome. Ends.
Any closing remarks? Anything you're looking forward to? Andy,
back training. I'm feeling right. So
looking at your exes on the wall.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I've got to do this drill 3 times a day where I basically have an X directly in front of me on the wall and I have to shape my head left and right for a minute.
Like 30 seconds.
Then up and down for 30 seconds.
You're gonna have a massive neck.
Walk. I know. Some neck anyway, Mick. But walk in a straight line and then turn my head left and right for a minute, and then I gotta do the exact same drill, but then count back from 100.
I mean, that's hard for anybody.
So, yeah,
to do.
Man. Yeah, you know? It's hardcore training. Give it a go.
Sweet. Yeah. Miles, any closing remarks?
Not particularly.
No.
No. Just that it's great to have everybody back together, and we should really try and push to get a guest in next.
We definitely have a guest coming in next.
Who have you got organized?
I can't say at this point.
You can't say at this point in time.
No. But we'll let you
know. Well, now he's on a pedestal. Now everyone's going to be like, oh my God, somebody like crazy.
Make sure like,
my postman.
Thank you. Edit the music now, back.
Yeah. Anyone that doesn't know what that is, that's the pride. That's the pride
cover
theme.
Music.
Is that what that was?
That sounded like the pride entrance here now.
Yeah,
no. Lucky I didn't take over there to be like lesbian. What the fuck?
The angry remix.
Yeah.
Watching the next pride fight and Phil Mitchell walks out.
I just wonder
what bodies Ken is going to put us on next.
Why? You got to give us a hint who it is now.
Well, I don't know for sure.
So you don't know yet? So you're lying to the public?
I'm waiting for replies.
It's like Bisping and George. Don't lie to the public, George.
Fuck off.
I can't tell you who at this point, but it's definitely going to be somebody.
Excellent.
Somebody good,
yeah. In the mix.
In what field?
We will look forward to it.
Thank you, Ken.
That's what we will do.
No problem.
Shit.
Brilliant.
Ken, I was fishing.
Anything else? No? All good?
No, we're all good.
Grant, we're out the gap. Rambling Rhinos number 8. You can catch 1-7 on iTunes, SoundCloud, humorandokilkenny.com, and anywhere else that's half decent at Dolan Out Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
Cheerio.
Peace.